wanted the best, you've got the best podcast. The hottest podcast in the world. The Chris Voss Show, the preeminent podcast with guests so smart you may experience serious brain bleed. The CEOs, authors, thought leaders, visionaries, and motivators. Get ready. Strap yourself in. Keep your hands, arms, and legs inside the vehicle at all times, because you're about to go on a monster education roller coaster with your brain. Now, here's your host, Chris Voss.
Hi, this is Voss here from thechrisvossshow.com. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. She does that so well. She does it so beautifully. That operatic Iron Lady delivery is far better than I ever did it for the first 15 years. Welcome to the big show, my family and friends. As always, we have the most smartest minds and brilliant people on the show, the CEOs, the billionaires. In fact, I'll tease out, there's another billionaire coming on the show again. It's not one we've had before, but there's another one we're working from Silicon Valley that's coming on for a new book. The White House presidential advisors, the Pulitzer Prize winners, the great authors, the minds that share with you all the great stories come on the show and improve the quality of your life, inspire you, motivate you. And then I'm just some idiot with the mic who makes the guests look good. So it's all about the guests, folks. But in the meantime, refer the show to your family, friends, and relatives. Go to goodreads.com, Fortress Chris Voss, LinkedIn.com, Fortress Chris Voss. Subscribe to that big LinkedIn newsletter, the 130,000 LinkedIn group, and all the places we are on TikTok and Facebook. We had an amazing gentleman on the show. Steve Biederman joins us on the show today. We're going to be talking about everything he does and some really cool stuff to inspire and educate people. He's the CEO of Noble Biz, and he also has an amazing podcast that he launched. I love the title of this thing, Lessons I've Learned in No Particular Order. Steve Biederman is the CEO of Noble Biz and a true leader and influencer within the contact center space. He started as a call agent some 40 years ago, and soon enough, he had his own sales team. In his podcast series, Steve is sharing with you something that he's been working on for his lifetime. A glimpse into what it's like behind the scenes of being a CEO, a collection of lessons and learned in the pursuit of true purpose in business and courageous leadership. His years of experience in business brought him today to discuss life experiences, lessons learned, tipping points, and everything it takes to become and continue to be a great entrepreneur and crush it with your business. He's also an Amazon best-selling author of 4 corporate thrillers, and he wrote and spoke for many leading contact center publications and guides his life by the motto, make a promise, keep a promise, because the loan sharks like that. Welcome to the show. How are you, Steve?
Hey, Chris. Make a promise, keep a promise. Let me get my list of loan sharks. And
I was just going to say, you know, because your bank loan likes that, but loan sharks
are not funny. Yeah, that's right. So. Thanks for introducing me. I was glad to hear who I was, too. So thanks for filling me in as well. I am the CEO of Noble Biz, and we're a technology provider for contact center communications all over the world. So we're a global leader in that arena, and I've been in it for about 25 years. After building global offices, though, and traveling through different communities around the world, I realized that there was a lot of intrigue, and I began to fill out my slow time with this idea of corporate thrillers and following this CEO around the world. So that's what you were referring to with that. And then I realized, you know, I know a lot of stuff, but I have no idea how that happened because I'm not the most highly educated. I'm really not the smartest. And honest to God, I am running from those loan sharks. So maybe I should just say how I do that. And that was, how'd that happen? And that was in no particular order.
There you go. That sounds like an interesting way to live your life. So now you created this podcast. You're compacting the knowledge you've gained over all these years, sharing with people and helping entrepreneurs improve the quality of their business and life.
I'll tell you, honestly, it's a work of a lifetime for me. And all kidding aside, it's my favorite thing to do. You know, I mean, I love running my company and I love building our teams and mentoring and coaching I can come in contact with and influence. But really kind of getting out of your head how you learned. When I started in business, nobody helped me do anything. And the mentors that I had in my life were ones that I adopted that never knew that I was adopting them. So they weren't like, I'm going to be your mentor, Steve, just follow me along. I didn't have that. And a lot of hard-earned moments, a lot of moments of just living to fight another day. And through that, being able to build a couple different global leaders in technology, and in fact, in not being a technologist, I realized, you know, this had to happen somehow. It isn't just you're lucky, or it isn't just good decisions all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was really, I picked up and I learned things. I learned formulas. And I think that people need to understand that life just happens, right? We react to it. And if I heard another one of your podcasts, Chris, on doing the next right thing. And it's really often that just do the next right thing, but remember what you did and debrief on it. And then I lay all that out in our podcast. And now right, turning those podcasts into a book series that hasn't yet been released.
Oh, that'll be great to look forward to, because you've written several books before and putting out a book series for that. You know, what you're talking about, I think, is kind of what I discovered is somewhere in my journey as an entrepreneur that I had like a little toolbox. I used to call it my toolbox. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of my operational manual, my operational functionality of what I would do. And I would usually turn to it, too, when I would get off course. You know, I'd be partying or having too much fun or traveling too much, and the business would start to suffer and things would start going down. And I'd be like, whoa, we got to get back to basics, you know, the John Wooden back to basics. And so it was a toolbox that I would always turn to when I'm like, okay, well, things are failing right now because I'm probably not doing the stuff I'm supposed to be doing. And then, of course, there were lots of problem solving things in that toolbox. And so it sounds like you're talking about some of the tools that and patterns and mechanisms that you used.
It is, you know, history. I love that because it's in alignment with what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll tell you a short story. Years ago, this was 2004-ish. I had one of my offices was in Pakistan, and I was in Pakistan and invited onto their equivalent of like the Today Show, kind of a format. And when I went on it, I thought they would be talking about our company, and they didn't. They began to ask me questions about the world and things I believed in, social structure and global economy. And honestly, I up until that point in my life, all I was doing was fighting to build a business. And so my thinking was very narrow. I got through it. I muddled through it. I don't really know that they noticed it as much as I was embarrassed. And when I got on my airplane, I was flying home. I was still so uncomfortable. Instead of sleeping, I pulled out a legal pad with a pen and said, I don't know what I even believe in. What do I believe in? And I started to bullet point, not deep thoughts, everything I believe in. And I was like shocked at how many pages of things I actually believed in. Because if you'd have truly asked me, I'd say, you know, I believe in this thing, one thing, go make money, or, you know, go, you know, type of a thing. So I write all this out, and it was this kind of an emptying of my soul, and it took hours, and I kept going back to it. And I recognized pretty soon afterwards how comfortable I was starting to feel comfortable in my business in parallel with this. Mm-hmm. And I realized that you can't really be successful. You can't really make decisions unless that are dependable and that come back to your toolkit you referred to and those formulas and patterns, unless you know who you are. So how do I believe about the world? How do I believe socially, personally, on and on and on? And once you lay that out and come to an agreement that you are a bundle of conflict, and there isn't necessarily consistency in that, but it is who you are, it's much easier to make decisions and to get to those formulas that, you see, business is based upon a pretty simple piece here. And it's you have to make decisions. We're paid in management to make decisions. Mm-hmm. So make your decision and don't make it so laborious that you forget that tomorrow, if you made the wrong decision, just go make another decision. And yeah. To do that requires you to know your belief system. And it took me like ever to recognize I needed to know what I believed in first, instead of how I did it in midstream. And it's one of the lessons in my series, which is talking about how do you get to what you believe in. And it's pretty straightforward and simple. It's we are who we are. So let's just face it. Look in the mirror.
There you go. And you're right. That belief system, your values, maybe some people could say, it gives you a compass to work from. Because right. if you don't, you're kind of rudderless. You're just kind of, I believe in whatever's going on today.
Right. And by the way, that's an interesting point. Although we aren't exactly rudderless, because we think we know what we believe in. You know, we think we know what we like to eat or how we like to think. But we don't ever do any debrief on it, right? Unless you're in a conversation, and then you really only say what fits you into that group at that time. Yeah. So it's really about the courage to look at yourself and just don't criticize it. Don't judge yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't have to judge yourself just because you like one thing and don't like something else that other people do or don't.
There you go. That is a great tool. Let's talk a little bit about your upbringing, your history. What shaped you into being an entrepreneur? What was your childhood life like? And how did you find your way into entrepreneurism?
Really, really interesting. Do you have 3 days? Let me begin on day one. No, I was raised very normal, a doctor's family.
Too bad. Normal. That's too bad.
I'm Jewish, and I grew up in a non-Jewish neighborhood where I was the only one, so I was the one that everybody pounded on in Chicago. Geez. And told by my father, you can't come in, defend who you are. I don't want to be that. You don't have a choice. Go out, fight, fight, fight. So I kind of learned how to defend the skinny little guy, defend themselves. Mm-hmm. And I what's an interesting thing is I was in this highly motivated mother and father driven family. I never had any plans ever. I was a tennis player. I was sponsored by Spalding and I played tennis for my childhood around the country. And that seemed to be okay. that worked. I worked hard. I was disciplined. You know, I knew how to do that. And when I got my scholarship offers, I looked at him and I told my dad, no way, I'm not playing anymore. I'm done. And he's like, well, then I'm not paying. Okay. You ain't playing, I'm not paying. And so I was like, okay, that's fine. And so I became the ultimate drifter, hippie,
really?
James Michener, travel around the world and drift and played guitar on street corners for sandwiches. And
how long did you do that?
When I was 18, instead of going to college, I was traveling around Europe and then Israel because they took me. And I just lived in parks and lived on beaches and played music, put a blanket out and played music. And people would throw coins or bring you, in those days in Europe, they were called discos, but they weren't really what we think of that. They were like coffee houses and a lot of pillows and a lot of you know, dope and things like that.
Dope. Oh, wow. I see what the angle was here now.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is all coming together for me now and making sense.
When I went to college, I finally came back and did pay for myself to go to college. I needed to pay for myself. Yeah. So I began to play guitar in bars. It beat the hell out of the first job, which was working in a nursing home. And I kept walking by this bar where there was music, and I begged my way in, hey, can I play one night? And I put a cup out and made a lot of money. And this is really way better than what I was doing. And to do it, but I never finished college. I ended up in a recording contract situation and took it and did music and then met my wife and left my family sort of disowned me for
being a bum.
Not really a bum. I was making good.
Oh, yeah, you were doing your way.
And then I got picked up. I quit music, left, walked away from my recording contract, hopped on I-95 in Florida where my contract was, with Pickwick International, and I had no money, and I hitchhiked out of town, got picked up by magazine salespeople, a gypsy group, and they taught me how to sell for a month, and I ran away to Denver, Colorado, stopped there, no money, slept on a floor, did five different jobs, said I'm never going to make money playing music again. I'm going to prove to that damn father of mine I know how to do something. And my wife, who I met, said, I would marry you, but you have to have one job, not five.
Yeah.
You just need one job.
And she's like, going to say you straight.
She was that, actually, that job drove me into business, into wanting more, and starting to force other people to mentor me and educate me by my listening to them. And steps go to the next step. But just like my books, it's in no particular order, right?
There you go. So the wife helps kind of get you down the road there. But it's interesting. You went a lot of journey. I didn't go to college. I was supposed to go to college with a Pell Grant, and I started my first company by accident because I got fired from McDonald's for having long rocker hair, and stories in my book. And I decided to skip college and never went back. Now I did, full disclosure, because sometimes the kids get a hold of what I say and they go, Chris didn't go to college either. And no, I ordered Harvard Business Review magazines, the quarterlies, and I ordered some courses from them on how to run a business. And I read every business book I can find. I gave myself my own MBA, and that's what I did. So just skipping college doesn't work, but it sounds like you learned some things from those journeys you went through.
Well, I did, sales
and other things.
I did what you did. I'm so happy you said what you said, because I've never heard anybody else but me.
I did it for you, man. I knew you would be eventually on the show.
You now know that story of mine, but I got to a point to where I kind of lied myself into a corporate job. Mm-hmm. And I was in it, running a marketing group in a large major corp. And I was sitting in this room with these MBAs, and they all had a lot to talk about, and I had nothing to talk about with them. And I realized pretty quickly that the only way I was going to stay in that room or go beyond that room was I had to get results. But I also realized that I envied their education. So while working towards recognizing what results were necessary, I came upon this idea that I would educate myself, and I began to pick up books to read, and I'd go to the library and do it, but I didn't like it because it was too heavy reading a whole book, right? So I said, okay, I'm just going to read a chapter in a book, and then a day. And then I did that, and I'm very disciplined. And then it was like, no, I don't, that's kind of boring too. It's the same book. I get it. It didn't take me the whole book to get the message. So then I started to get books and say, on any given day, I'm going to open it up, and wherever I open it up, I'm going to read that for, 10 pages to a chapter. And I did that for 27 years.
All right.
Every day.
Wow.
Anything. And just, I'll bet you'll agree with this, that there wasn't any epiphany in anything you read. It was that you filled up your head with a lot of information that you tap, that naturally your kind of computer on top of your neck taps into through your life.
Yeah. I think we mentioned this the other day, there's things that you learn on your journey and going through some of these ways, and sometimes non-conventional ways, where you pick up things that you actually need to know. And so, like for me, I knew that I wanted to eventually run a major, more multi-million dollar company someday. And I wanted to be CEO, and I want to have thousands of employees. And I knew that I needed to prepare for that. Because you just don't gotta be an idiot if you think you're just gonna show up and swing that home run. And so I prepared for what that day would become. And I read everything I was, but we were talking the other day, there's a famous story that Steve Jobs does it on a speech. You can Google it if you want. He tells a story at a speech at a college, and he tells a story about how he flunked out of college, he hated college, he just kind of dropped out and quit, but he would go to the one or two classes that really appealed to him. And one of them was typefacing, I think it's called, or typeforming, typefacing and fonts, and the creation of of all the different fonts that are out there and stuff. And that really appealed to him for some reason. He just really liked it. And he, you know, he would sneak into the class because he quit college and, yeah. and take the class. And at the time, he probably didn't, I don't know if he realized that he would be utilizing it to make himself a fortune, but he eventually, when he started Apple Computer, found that the word processor and being able to use different typefaces to design, you know, posters and stationery and business cards and all the things the early Apple Computer was great for doing, that was revolutionary for him having that knowledge. And if he hadn't done that, you have to, you know, they might have turned Apple Computer, I don't know, into Atari, because they used to work for them, him, yeah. him and what's his face.
That story, by the way, and just to break in, mm-hmm. because, you know, I think it says to you or me or Steve Jobs, we've all done pretty well. You know, we've made a lot of mistakes along the road. Ultimately, the outcome of looking through your experience was it worked out. And it doesn't mean for me that I don't believe in education. In fact, I do. And I do visiting things at programs in different universities. But so I support education, but it, no matter what choices you make as you're growing, the key isn't how you get educated often. It's always choosing to move forward and not just pause and not just be paralyzed.
Yep. Yep. And being able to utilize what you've learned is so important too. You know, recently I was banging through, I had set some goal last year that I was going to read like 100 to 200 books. And I was banging through Audible at like 2x. And I had somebody come on the show and they're like, that's a really dumb idea. And I go, why? Because you're not really focused on absorbing the information you're given. You're just focused on banging through the book and listening to it. And you probably remember most of it for, I don't know, a day after or half a day after, but then it's gone. And he goes, it's better to take your time, pour through a book, read it, soak into it, marinate in it, and everything else. And I'm like, God, you're right. I mean, there's so many books that I've read, and people are like, what was in it? And I'm like, I don't know. I can remember the title.
Yeah, I never remember the author, by the way.
Oh, well, that's it's not right. you just blow through them. So being able to soak in and learn what you're marinating, and it's interesting how these different journeys shape your life. Like, I've met CEOs of huge companies that, you know, they had a liberal arts college degree. And they're like, you know, Chris, it seems weird that I didn't have an MBA or some sort of business degree, but actually I learned more on how to be a great CEO and how to handle people and be empathetic and lead through liberal arts than I might have through an MBA.
And you know, like, wow, I never learned how to be a CEO until years of being a CEO and realizing I didn't know what a CEO did. and I actually, fortunately, by that time, there were search engines, and I went to them, and I put in, what does a CEO do? And I began to do that reading for the next decade or so. But honestly, though, we get to be who we get to be because we want something, and we're And that's the one thing you can't give anybody, which is if they're driven enough to make choices and to walk forward. And I refer it back to my mom. My mom had polio when I was born. And when she walked, you would hear her knee crack because it was bone on bone. And she would walk with her cane. And you'd hear this down the hall. And I always, and my mom became, she was one of the top narrators for audio books for the Library of Congress for many years. And she did that as a volunteer, actually. But so she really was excellent in her drive. And there was a lot that held her back, right? Like she couldn't drive. She couldn't drive with the right leg. She had to drive with the left leg. She had to get a car to do it that way. But everything she wanted, she ended up doing. And when I think about wanting to stop, or when I'm in pain and I just can't, or I'm just demoralized, any of those things that happen to all of us, I think I fortunately have the gift of remembering my mom's knee cracking, walking down the hall because she kept taking another step forward.
Wow. And so the lesson there is to always take another step forward. Yeah. There's going to be pain. There's going to be issues. There's going to be tribulations. And sometimes, you know, I've learned that in my life, you know, sometimes when you feel like you want to stop or you feel want to crumble to your knees in the darkest moments, the most cathartic things, sometimes the best thing to do is just keep moving.
Let's talk about it, Chris. You do a lot of these, right? You do a lot of these moments. Mm-hmm. And there have to be moments where you go, oh my gosh, another day, I've got to do these. Mm-hmm. And we all face those, you know. But you do it. So, mm-hmm. But you step in and you do it. And whether it's before, in the first minute, 10 minutes into it, or maybe at the end you realize it, something good happened there. And move forward. And that's the thing is, don't judge, just do. Just do.
You know, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. There's always a time where, and I used to hate it when people used to say it to me sometimes in my dark moments. They're like, someday you're going to laugh about this. You're going to look back and laugh about this. And I'm like, in the meantime, I'm going to punch you in the face. But it's true. And I've learned it over life to accept it. But it's interesting how we all go through these dark moments and there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. And so by keeping moving, you're closing the distance to the light at the end of the tunnel. You're getting closer there. It is what it is, but you've got to fight through it and keep moving. You cannot let it cripple you. You cannot let it stop you. You cannot let it break you down. You have to keep moving. Sometimes, even though it's the most painful thing you're going to do, even though it's going to hurt, even though it seems worthless, it seems like, why bother? You have to keep moving because once you stop, you're dead. So,
yeah, right. And then what? You know, I mean, life is like the weather. You know, the clouds come, the rain and the sun comes too. And do your best to embrace all of it. I'll tell you one last thing. I had a moment where I spent my whole life looking for my father's approval because, you know, I didn't do the path that he wanted. Yeah. He was a driver and didn't like that I had built this global company without the education that he believed in. And he didn't like it at all. And I had a moment in Washington, D.C., where I had the opportunity to be on stage with Condoleezza Rice, one of the prime minister of the PLO, and Walter Isaacson and some other serious people. And after that, it was for a charitable group that I had put together called Commerce for Peace. So I go see my parents, and there were photographs of me with Condoleezza Rice and things like that.
Wow.
And I was proud, right? I was like, had this old hippie end up here, right? Kind of a thing. But more than that, I just wanted my dad to say, I'm proud of you, right? And instead, he said the opposite. And he said some nasty things about me being on stage with people that he didn't support and negative, 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 negative. Mm-hmm. And I walked out of there, maybe one of the serious moments of demoralization in my life, which was I thought I was something and I'm still nothing. That was how I perceived it. And because no matter what I had done, in that moment, I realized that's what seemed important to me. And it took me some time, but the time it took me was time I kind of put it aside and kept moving forward, gained perspective. And I'll tell you today, I'm proud as hell of who I am.
There you go.
And I'm just sorry for him that he didn't get it.
You know? There you go. The sins of the father or the sins of the son.
Yeah.
But you can't let that be put on you. There comes a time where you have to say, his sins are not mine.
That's right.
His weaknesses are not mine. His failures are not mine. It's an interesting dichotomy when you really think about it, the relationship between a father and a son, especially if there's contention there.
Yes.
And jealousy, and you know, there's just issues. And me and my father had that. I was lucky enough that at the end, but when it seemed like in the last few months, as we were coming to the end, that he, you know, we were worn down. He'd seen some psychiatrist that had opened his eyes that his narcissism would have been too harsh throughout life. And he apologized to all of us. And so we sat down and we cleared all the decks. Did you ever get a chance to do that with your father?
Only in a way, but by then he was a bit addled and it was hard to take it for what it was. But what I did do is I spent a lot of time with my dad. He was in a retirement center in Florida, and I would fly down from Denver every weekend. It was last year, every weekend, and just hang, And life is about, you have to do what's important to you, not what's important to you because of that other person. Mm-hmm. You just do what's right. I mean, people were saying to me, why are you devoting so much time to him? He doesn't like you. And I'm like, but it's not really about him. It's about me.
It's about you.
It's what I need to do. So I have a suggestion, Chris. My book, Lessons I've Learned in No Particular Order, you should join me and you should become a co-author of it.
We can talk about that off the thing. That would be definitely an interest to me because I'm working on my second book. I remember how long it took me to get my dad to say how proud he was of me. And I remember the exact moment in time because it was so hard to get. And I think it was like 35. But, you know, there was a lot of jealousy and resentment from my father. And our whole lives we'd had issues with each other. I think I didn't start it.
We're just growing up, right? We're just
he was a man who tried his best, and that's sometimes all you can give people because that's sometimes all they have.
Yeah.
But moving on, you know, you've led this great life. You're leading the podcast. So tell us about the vision you have for the podcast going out. What are you going to continue to keep putting out? How can people onboard with it? How can people get in touch so they're aware of what's going on?
Okay.
And then tease out to those books that you're working on again.
We'll do it. And thanks for sharing what you shared too, Chris.
You got it.
Meaningful to me. I hope everybody listening. So why am I doing this? I'm putting this series. I have done this series. There are over 40 episodes now. Lessons I've Learned in No Particular Order. And most of them are related to business, but business being life being related to business and it all really being somewhat the same decision process, I think it's helpful to everybody. I think for me, I had this very hard need, desire to have somebody help me. And nobody really was willing to do it. Maybe I wasn't willing to ask. I don't know. And so I got to a point where you begin to think about your legacy, not for 20 centuries from now, but just, you know, what can I leave? What seed can I put in the world that benefits it? And to me, it's my life's experience. And maybe I can give to this next generation something they themselves may need, and it may help somebody. But I don't really know how. I'm not planning to put a constructive course in motion, or you come to this course, you get to go from A to Z and be better, because that's not how my life worked. But life does work if you work it. And let me share with you some of the stuff that happened to me in my life and see if it resonates for anybody at the time they need it. You know, they say in things like AA that people will go in and they'll hear stuff, they don't like it, they're angry with it, it's not for them, and they leave. And somebody sober will say, oh, it's too bad they didn't get what they should have gotten from it. But that's not how it is. So you go to that, you hear something, and then someday in your life, when it's necessary and it you'll remember it, and it just that seed may just help you. And it's the same thing with my book. They're just different lessons. And that seed may, at the right time, not in time, but at the right time, help someone. And people can get a hold of it. The easiest way right now is go to LinkedIn, Stephen Michael Biederman. You'll see tabs for leadership, or click on them, any of the videos, are these, you can go to YouTube, Lessons I've Learned, my name, Stephen Michael Biederman, Apple and onward. I did not prepare here to necessarily promote my book, simply to just be able to share this time with you, but I am now converting the podcast into the written version and audio. We have the audio, but the written version, and it's taking on a little different slant, same information, but I'm not just taking the narrative and copying it over. I'm taking the lessons and saying them in a different way, the way you would when you write it.
There you go. It's going to be wonderful to see. SteveGivesyour.com as we go out one last time.
Say that one more time.
Give us your .coms one last time.
Okay. The company, and I hope that anybody in the contact center space comes to it, because we make a promise and we keep it, which is really our core value. It's www.noblebiz, NOBELBIZ.com. And me, best way is Stephen Michael Biederman. Go to LinkedIn.
There you go. Thank you very much, Steve, for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Chris, I enjoyed it. Thanks a lot, and I look forward to talking to you more.
Let's do it. And thanks, Sir Honest, for tuning in. Go to goodreads.com, Fortress Chris Foss, LinkedIn.com, Fortress Chris Foss, Chris Foss, one on the TikTokity, and all those places on the internet. Thanks for tuning in. Be good to each other. Stay safe. We'll see you guys next time.